It's 1 o'clock, and this is WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford Community College, live, in fact. Happy holidays beginning, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Let's dig deeper into local news and toss in a few alternative views. My name is Jay Koronek. Happy to be with you today. It is, of course, the day after Thanksgiving. And in addition to that, we are in the studio on Evacuation Day and Black Friday and Buy Nothing Day. So it's a big deal celebration here in the studio where there's only three of us. Thank you, Joe, for the great big band show. Big band, Broadway and beyond. And with me in the studio today is our WHFR News Director, Dennis Reimar. So happy holidays to you, Dennis.
Happy everything you said, because there's a lot of things to celebrate today.
Right, right. Well, I just heard
and tomorrow,
about
too.
I just heard about last week, Evacuation Day, which is officially a national day of remembrance. I'm not sure if it's an official national holiday, but historically, it was celebrated on November 25th, before there was a Thanksgiving.
Okay.
It's kind of interesting that Thanksgiving Day was not made an official national holiday until the term of Abraham Lincoln.
Sure.
That's right. So people actually did celebrate November 25th as Evacuation Day, and it was a big deal. Last week, I heard about it first from Sarah Vowell, and she is a writer of historical books that have a great sense of humor and point out the ironies of history frequently. She's a great print author.
What's
Sarah
her last name?
V-O-W-E-L. Two L's.
Two L's. Still mm-hmm. very appropriate, right?
Yeah, and she's become now supposedly an official correspondent for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart.
Oh, good.
And that means she may not be on every episode, but maybe once a week or so that she's going to be making commentary. She was a little stiff and nervous, where she usually isn't when she comes to talk about her books. She has a great book about the Pilgrims.
No kidding.
I can't remember the title now, right now, but
right.
that came out a couple of years ago, and she heavily researched it and pointed out all the ironies and weirdness of our forefathers or five fathers, or however many there were. But she was there commenting on Evacuation Day, and just briefly, it is the day that the British left the U.S. I mean, they physically packed up and sailed all their boats out of here. So it was the real official ending of the American Revolution.
Yeah, because they were in their they stayed in their ships on, off the shore a little ways for a long time.
Right. They had prison ships.
That's
for everybody
right.
that they captured, they had something like 40 these, because well, they're somewhat smaller, you know, they're not luxury cruise liners. They're these old wooden, somewhat smaller boats like they had in those days. But they still, they kept at one point, well, the problem is they had these prisoners over a 10-year period of conflict
mm-hmm.
in these boats. And many of them died rather quickly. It was terrible conditions. They weren't feeding them. There was, you know, all kinds of pestilence. And they kept offering all of these American Revolutionary prisoners, and some of them were just terrorists. I mean, they weren't caught in action, but they were thought of being spies or something.
Right.
And they just threw everybody they could think of in these terrible, terrible prisons. Think Abu Ghraib, whatever. And they were all on the boats in New York City Harbor.
Well, it wasn't like the British were actually welcome on land.
But they would have allowed them to have their freedom if they just simply sign a statement of being faithful to the king and that they wouldn't do any more revolutionary activities.
So you
but
can,
these people wouldn't.
Too proud.
They wouldn't. Well, they had a cause. They had a mission. And with the sad part about the prison ships, especially seeing the prison ships leave, I think that was a big part of Evacuation Day, not just the other British troops and officers and soldiers leaving, too, on this day. And what year was it? Oh, my gosh. Well, don't worry about it. It was 17-something.
1780s, probably.
Yeah, right. But it was the official end because they just up and left. And the prison ships left, too, and let go those remaining prisoners that were still alive. 11,000 people who were in favor of the revolution or thought to be spies only or fighting against the British, 11,000 died in those prison ships. And that's more than all of our soldiers who died in the Revolutionary War conflicts.
Right.
So an untold story, or somewhat untold until for the last 100 or so years, because we're not remembering Evacuation Day and the torture and the resilience, until they died anyway, of our own soldiers and revolutionary organizers and planners. Just a terrible, terrible chapter, but it had been a big day of celebration until President Lincoln came up with the idea of Thanksgiving Day.
Which is appropriate, because after everybody left for Evacuation Day, I'm sure there was a lot of giving thanks. You know, I mean, there was a lot of...
absolutely.
We won, basically. Well, that was it.
Remember, we had this little skirmish with the British again.
Sure.
And it was 1812, the War of 1812.
Sure.
And the British actually sailed up the Potomac and took over the White House and burned it down.
That's right.
They burned down our White House, folks, and then we built back up sort of like the one we have today,
yes.
somewhat better. But and thanks in the War of 1812 to the British and a lot of the French and the Native Americans who fought the British up north, too, because the British were trying to come down through Canada also to reinvade and take back those colonies, those rebellious colonies, which was kind of a crazy idea. It was like 30 years after our revolution.
Well, they figured that, you know, give us a false sense of security.
Well, probably the profit motive, you know. We need those taxes on that tea.
Absolutely.
You know? I don't know. But so today is Evacuation Day. It's of course, late to mention Buy Nothing Day, but that is an international day of observance where you're not supposed to support the commercial consumer system and buy crazy stuff. There was an article in the New York Times today is that analysts say that the best deals on things that are quality items will still come in the next couple of weeks. So people today, they said it was quite clear that they have cheap deals on cheap items.
They're loss leaders, sure.
In other words, low quality stuff.
Or they'll give you a sampling of something that's high quality, but only have a few in stock. So it's like almost like a bait and switch.
I noticed that Apple iPads at Walmart, you could buy them for the regular price. Mm-hmm. They start at $500. And then they give you an $80 Walmart
gift card.
Credit card to use on something else, of course, at Walmart. So they're not really losing anything there since their profit margins are significant. Today, Apple has actually 10% off if you order online.
The iPad too?
Yeah. Even the iPad too is $41 off today. So that's almost 10% off the $500. Not quite.
That's actually a pretty good deal, isn't it?
Well, you can't find it anywhere else, and certainly not directly from Apple.
Right.
But I'm not pushing these things, but I'm saying that the real quality stuff, folks, if you're going to buy things that are going to last or the best type of product, not just to buy a camera, but maybe buy one of the better quality cameras, even at the same price, you know, you have to do some comparison shopping so you get the best value for your dollar too. But it's a social thing, you know, try to get the sales. One guy I heard interviewed on another radio station this morning said, yeah, it's an American thing to get in a line and stand in the cold. I didn't know that.
I
hadn't heard that before. Only stupid Americans, I think, will get in line and stand in the cold for hours and hours. There's no rational approach to that, but there is no doubt some camaraderie of the people in line. They hold your place if you got to go to the bathroom somewhere.
Sure.
Or you go get coffee for the other people in line, or you share some of your coffee maybe with them.
And until they get inside and they're fighting over the last of whatever's there.
Exactly. The doors open and then forget about the
camaraderie goes out the,
I don't know. I hope everybody's had fun and enjoyed themselves. Of course, be careful out there from now through the holidays in terms of traffic and driving. driving. A relative of mine this morning was on the TV news, apparently. Slow news day, other than Black Friday shopping, in a car accident on Southfield Expressway, where the other person, I don't know what state they're in, but their car flipped over several times and was very badly damaged. They caused the accident. My relative, I think her car is totaled, even though it was a brand new Ford Escape, but nonetheless, she's relatively good, except a little shook up. Her car didn't flip over, at
good.
Least.
Excellent.
But people are out there, and they haven't driven in a long time, and they're driving to get places where they've never gone before.
And they're tired
and
for
they're
too
lost,
much turkey.
And, or they've been up all night sure. waiting for the sale. So not just today, but over the next couple weeks, through the holiday season, you got to know that, I mean, people coming in from out of town
sure.
that may not have GPS or what is it that they haven't recalculated it or whatever, and so it gives them the wrong directions. They turn the wrong way on a one-way street, whatever. You got to be careful because it is much more dangerous, even with the good weather, because people are driving places they wouldn't normally go, and maybe they shouldn't even be driving. Who knows? But they feel the compulsion to get out there and shop.
Now, tomorrow, though, is another revered day, but it's only in America, from what I know, and it's shopping small stores.
Well, that's been promoted in this area. Shop at small stores in your local area.
Sure.
And it's amazing the quality of items that we have in Dearborn and the surrounding area. But you have to sort of, you got to really look for it. If you don't live in that area, then maybe you got to drive up and down the streets. I don't know, Ann Arbor or Plymouth, Michigan, or
I find a lot of
Northville or places like that, Royal Oak. I mean, there's a lot of unique and stores that have quality items. Maybe it's not as cheap as Walmart for like a pair of gloves or something, but they really will be special. And talk about supporting the local economy.
It is. And, and I found a lot of information on our dearborn.patch.com. So we want to use one of our local media mm-hmm. sources. I'm sure you can go to tap into the city wherever you're at.
Dearborn Chamber of Commerce, they have a website. Yep. And of course, they're basically just taking ads on that site from the people who are members. But there's more than 100, I think almost 200 businesses that are members of the Dearborn Chamber of Commerce, as well as nonprofits like Henry Ford Community College and others so they're trying to expand it. They said, oh, we're going to have a big email, a monthly magazine we're going to send out, or weekly, with highlights and that. They did for a while. Hasn't started up yet, but maybe for the holiday season. I saw one special holiday event promoted on the Dearborn Chamber of Commerce in their email to me today, but maybe their website has more. But highly recommend that. One of the things I did, not that it matters, but I'm not into driving somewhere and fighting the crowds and standing in line and just trusting the store will have the cheapest price, because I do a lot of comparison shopping and I do it online. So the quality of items and the prices I want are usually not available locally. But what I've tried to do is shop online from local Michigan businesses.
Right.
And I have found some great, I shouldn't mention the name, but a couple of great, I guess you call them gourmet or fair trade coffee grinding companies, where you can buy coffee, in bags, either whole beans or ground, and some of the special coffees available around the world, and I look for fair trade. But it's amazing to me that they have prices that are cheaper than, Green Mountain Coffee, which right. is in which is in the stores, but also mail order from Vermont, and often more fair trade, too. Same thing with meat. I actually buy natural and or organic meat, and there's a couple of vendors in Michigan that have very high quality products. And so it's not a matter of driving there because, well, like one of the coffee places is in Traverse City.
That's cool.
It was like $7 to ship. And that was it, plus tax, of course, for 4 pounds of coffee. And so I think that's very important. We have a lot of great Michigan companies.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe some of them you can actually find online, and they'll probably be extremely competitive with the best online shopping anywhere else. I don't think anybody can beat the price of Amazon.com for books.
No.
But, but we do have some bookstores in Michigan, although Borders is no longer. So
we have some wonderful used bookstores that have almost as much variety as some of the newer stores, too.
Well, it's not totally a slow news day, folks. Let's, Dennis and I will jump back in here after that wonderful, stirring quarter of an hour commentary on the days and the holidays and the foods and shopping. Okay, very briefly, in the Press and Guide, just do some highlights. We're not normally into highlights. We've got a couple other topics later in the hour, including an interview recorded last Friday with Representative 15th District Representative George Duraney. So I'll be playing that for you later. The Dearborn Press and Guide from last Sunday, and I'm showing this to Dennis because I don't think he saw it. Ooh, upscale resale shop eyeing downtown Dearborn. Of course, my first question is, which downtown?
Right, you know, and then what's your second question?
Well, second one is, what do they mean by upscale resale? To me, in a way, I think of, and it's not exactly resale, maybe it's overstock, TJ Maxx. Marshalls, they have designer brands, but at much less prices. And sure. It really is the big time names. I don't know if it's higher quality products, but they have the designer names. Well, I read the article through, and in the first paragraph it came in, it's Goodwill Industries. It's Goodwill. I mean, I guess Goodwill is one step above Salvation Army in terms of resale.
You know, I don't even know. I've never really thought about categorizing them.
But, I mean, they're a fine business and nothing wrong with that. But they're going to be in one of the Newman vacant properties near Military and Michigan Avenue. I'm not sure which one.
Okay. There's a few.
Yeah, you take your choice. I would assume it'd be in the shopping center on that end where it used to be a computer store years and years and years ago. It was a sort of, you go in there and they'll make it for you. You know, it's old PCs, the designs, and you could tell them what you wanted. And I think maybe it was Aztec, yeah.
It was just a monstrous Aztec sign.
Well, and nothing else has been in there. And that's in a shopping center with a lot of free parking nearby. So Maybe the Goodwill will go in there. It's not certain yet, I guess. Because Goodwill director Jeffrey Ukrainik said he approached property owner Norm Newman. I didn't know Mr. Newman's first name, but now I did. Norm Newman is almost as bad as Marty Moran. That alliteration is not a good thing in this case. Anyway, in July, with a proposal to lease the former... Oh, it's Inca Computers.
Inca, not Aztec.
Inca. Closer. I mean, it's one of those native tribes down there. Yeah. In the strip mall that houses ACO and Bellocino's. Mm-hmm. At first, Newman was skeptical. first second-hand store. Oh, can you pay my rent? I'm just making this up, folks. You know, the opinions expressed here on the show are not necessarily those of anyone else at the college here, Henry Ford Community College. After a visit to Goodwill's recently opened store in Canton, Mr. Newman said he was sold. He says, it doesn't look like a resale store. It doesn't smell like a resale store.
Oh, geez.
Thank you, Mr. Newman,
honesty. Not musty,
it doesn't feel like a resale store.
There's no, what are those things called?
I don't know. Musty. But, you know, even Salvation Army, they require that all the clothes be washed and cleaned before it's put on display. And they clean the floors, you know, and so on. I don't have the rest of the story with me. It was in the second section of the first section. Shame on them for doing that. Talk about not finding the rest of the story. The Press and Guide is now putting a second section, but they're not calling it Section B. It's still Section 1.
1A?
And they're continuing the pages. No, it's just page 12 ends the first section, and page 13 starts the second section. But they don't, it's just another group of pages, so who knows. But that's why you lose some stories if you throw away all the other sections, so sorry about that. But anyway.
So we have no way of knowing, but doesn't it seem like the upscale store means, for some of the plays, when my wife directed the one-act plays, we went to Goodwill stores or Salvation Army to get second-hand clothes for the wardrobe, for costumes, right?
Yeah.
Very inexpensive. I'm led to believe, just by what you said, that these prices may be a little higher because it's upscale. You know what I mean? What does that mean?
Well, you know, there was no discussion of upscale other than Mr. Newman said it didn't smell or look like a resale store.
So maybe that was it.
Upscale was something the editor of the paper put on the title. It's not a... I don't see that word upscale used by the author of the article, the writer J. Patrick Pepper. But and we don't know about the time frame because, again, that's not there. Anyway, it says it will. It will. It says that 100 residents.
100 residents
have to answer the question: is Goodwill a good fill for that space? And that will be a deciding factor in whether or not a secondhand store will soon open for business in downtown West Dearborn.
So Newman asked this question?
I don't know. That's who does the survey?
Wow. All right.
But they say 51% of the people that live or work in the radius consent, a variance can be granted by the city. Oh, the city doesn't want, they have a rule against the deterioration of the surrounding neighborhood.
Gotcha.
So if they a majority of people in that nearby neighborhood, 100 people, I guess, feel that that a resale shop would mean the deterioration of the surrounding neighborhood, then they wouldn't be for it. My daughter shops all the time at a place called Value Village.
Sure.
I don't know if you've heard of that.
Absolutely.
And she gets fantastically high-quality stuff for like 25 cents or a dollar at most. I mean, we're talking about winter parkas for a dollar. And so if they're really good quality, and they're very clean, and you would never know it was a resale product.
I buy books from them, five for a dollar.
Okay.
Paperback books. Go. It's amazing. Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
And I know Salvation Army has some good deals, too.
Sure.
Some good
stuff.
And
they have to wash the thing. My problem with it, can I tell you?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we're full disclosure on the show. My problem with Salvation Army has always been, and this is because I know people that have worked there, the employees get first crack at everything. Oh, and so when things come in and they're cleaned and like beautiful furniture that the public never sees if the employees need it.
That's the benefit of
and
working
there. And that's the benefit of working there. Can I have to expand on one story. We did a story last week regarding the closing of 10 bus routes in Dearborn, but there was no date in the story.
Right.
I ran into a Smart, the Smart Bus operator the day before Thanksgiving at the store, and she told me the date that the 10 routes will be no longer running in Dearborn is December 12th. So it was not in the story, but she said that was the date that they planned on no longer having that service.
Wow.
So I wanted to share that with people because it wasn't in the article, and for whatever reason, so we do know now, right from the horse's mouth.
Okay.
There you go.
Thank you, Mr. Horse.
I guess, yeah.
It's the other horse.
My work here is done. I can leave now, right?
Okay. But that's still almost too quick. That'll cut into some holiday plans.
You think?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a couple of weeks, sure.
Okay. Crazy. Well, there's a story, again, last Sunday, Dearborn Press and Guide, area schools recognized for beating the odds. Yeah, but only five. Three Dearborn public schools and two local academies, or also known as charter schools, did better than average. And the list includes Dearborn's Howe Trainable Center and Montessori. Okay. Iris Becker Elementary and Lowry Middle School and the Star International Academy and the Academy for Business and Technology, which I've heard of before. But I just feel the flip-flop is how many schools did only average or below average. I mean, it's wonderful to commend these five, but it looks like they didn't do stellar performance. They just received special recognition for performing better than similar schools. Well, congratulations to all of them. I always believed, and I don't know about the Howe Trainable Center, what they do, but that's where the Montessori, which is only like half-day sessions, unfortunately, it's not full-day sessions, or my daughter might have sent my granddaughter there. They don't provide lunch.
That is,
you could sign them up for double sessions, but you'd have to go and get them and feed them lunch.
Oh, you can't give them a lunch to bring with them.
No, I see. They don't watch them over that period of an hour or two between the morning and the afternoon.
Yeah, that does.
They don't have
the
money for that, I guess. My daughter went through Montessori, and she really benefited, I think, in the first few years from that.
Is the Dearborn Heights Montessori full day? I believe it is.
Dearborn Heights Montessori. Is there? Oh, Dearborn Heights. Oh, yeah. The Dearborn Heights.
I mean, that's
that's one of the large Montessoris, maybe the largest in Michigan.
Wow. Okay.
It is preschool through, is it eighth grade?
Yeah.
At least sixth grade, but eighth grade. And it's huge. And they do have, now what they have is they've actually taken over branches. The Montessori in Southgate is now run by them.
No kidding.
So it's like they sort of merged their facilities and plans. But my daughter went to a Montessori in Southgate, maybe the same building, but then they closed for a while and they reopened. Montessori is a great approach for early education. It's just too bad it's not traditionally well thought of, embraced.
Why?
I don't know, because it's very creativity oriented. There's a lot of freedom for the students, but there's a lot of discipline. For example, they have to take care of their own classrooms, like putting the chairs on the tables at night and cleaning off the chairs and cleaning up after themselves when they do class projects. No yelling or screaming is allowed in the classroom. It's one of the quietest schools I've ever walked into.
Really?
In terms of K-12.
But you work with your peers as well. I mean, there's a little bit of
there's a
influence.
Lot of collaboration with the other students, but there's a very special kind of discipline that comes out of that approach. Maria Montessori came up with it in the late 40s, early 50s, and I'm a real believer of it. The only disadvantage, they say, is that the kids aren't given enough discipline about handwriting. And that they, or spelling, and that they're at a disadvantage if they switch to schools that care about that. Now, I don't know many, unfortunately, many K through 12 that care about spelling or handwriting much anymore either, but that was always thought to be, they won't be able to write or spell when they get to
work with them at home.
Public school. That's crazy. It's, didn't affect, well, my daughter, I think, left after the third grade of Montessori. So she didn't, she was able to get in the public schools and make up the difference. And there wasn't a difficult transition or anything like that.
So she was from the Montessori that started in the 30s and 40s. Doesn't that go in direct opposition to some of the ways, like there was actual physical punishment in schools? Now, I never encountered this, but my wife says it, and maybe you've heard of it, where there's actual spanking at schools and things like that.
Well, yeah, in the 50s, when I went to school, I went to Detroit Public Schools and then Livonia Public Schools and then Flat Rock Public School. Sure, there was some so-called corporal punishment, but not murders or hangings anything.
No.
There were spankings.
But you would never see that in a Montessori.
Or slappings.
Would you agree?
No. Okay. That's definitely against the whole concept. And today, even of course, public schools, there's laws against that kind of thing. But they get their discipline in a different way. And it's just part of the philosophy of, you might say, empowering the students to be good. And I found it very, very effective.
Now, positive influence, sure.
Right. Maybe it's because the people that search out Montessori are the better educated and they have more money, too. And
right.
So they're already influencing their children with better habits because of their own knowledge and discipline and so on. In any event, that's why. So I don't know how much for that school being one of the better ones was due to the Montessori or the so-called training aspect of that Howe Training Center. But nonetheless, congratulations to them. That's okay. It's great to be recognized as doing something good. You wanted to mention the Tom Selleck connection, that there was a teacher in Dearborn recognized for her a special commemoration of Vietnam veterans, and the National Veterans Memorial Foundation, whose spokesperson is Tom Selleck, gave her an award.
Dearborn teacher. She's from Edsel Ford High School, a teacher at Edsel Ford. Her name is Lisa Lark. And that's right. She was presented with the Hometown Heroes Award by the History Channel and the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund at a benefit to raise money for the Education Center. Mm-hmm. And let's see, her project to find details and photos of every Dearborn man lost in the Vietnam War included a partnership with the city of Dearborn and the Dearborn Allied War Veterans Council. Basically, Tom Selleck was just there to give her the award, though.
Yeah. He's the figure. I mean, people pay money to go to a benefit just to see a famous person or hear him say a couple words. Oh, I saw Tom Selleck in person.
Great.
But he's always supported a lot of Michigan causes since he's from Michigan and Detroit, and he's back in the area every now and then to do that. So
yeah, but she had her picture taken with him, so she
that'll be a keeper. Yeah,
yeah, that was actually on the website. So congratulations to Lisa Lark.
I actually saw her. She was honored and gave a presentation during the Dearborn Memorial Day ceremonies.
This
last summer here in Dearborn. So
she's a big deal.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Well, no, it's great to remember those who have fallen in service to our country. And, of course, those who didn't fall, too, in service to our country, but risk their lives and maybe were forced to kill other people. That's a tough thing to do. And especially if there's a dispute about whether or not it's all valid, like Vietnam.
Right.
But they did it anyway because their government said to do it, so they are heroes.
Well, you asked me earlier if Selleck was a vet, and I don't know, but he is the national spokesperson.
Yeah, we could look that up quick, but I know he played a Vietnam vet Of course, Magnum P.I. is for his big TV series.
Right.
And that was part of the reason how he got, in coming back from Vietnam, he stopped at Hawaii.
Oh, that's right.
So that's where he took up.
I never really watched that show.
And a lot of his buddies in that story. Well, they did a lot of flashbacks, too, especially in the last couple of years where there weren't any more criminals left in Hawaii to do stories about. So they did flashbacks to Magnum's Vietnam career,
right.
And a woman that he was in love with. I did all these historical flashbacks, and it was all the last season. It seemed like it was all about Vietnam in a flashback, and all of his adventures or misadventures or whatever.
Right.
Okay, moving on. Shooting threat at HFCC. Sometimes we have to criticize the local papers, and especially, you know, the headlines are not usually written by the writers. That the headlines, that's a prerogative of the editors, mm-hmm. right? Right, Mr. Editor?
That's true, although I tend to sometimes get lazy and let the writer... No, it depends on the article. You're right.
Well, they could suggest a title.
They all do.
Yeah.
Every single one of them.
You try to be helpful. Yes. Because they really know the consequences of misleading people who only read the headlines. For example, in the Dearborn Times Herald this week... it says, shooting threat affects classes at HFCC. And I have to say, as the Seth Meyers says on Saturday Night Live, really? Really?
Really?
No. Everybody here was spooked because they all got an email that, oh, there's a death threat against people at the college.
Yep.
What? And then our controller had to send another email saying, well, you know, it was just a person that has already done this, and they have mental problems. We know who it is.
His parents were aware of
it. We've contacted the Dearborn Police. Mm-hmm. We've got extra people walking on campus. I mean, we've got 20,000 students approximately here going to school. Of course, there's going to be a few people that will threaten, in terms of physical threat of some sort, the teachers or administration or school in general or certain other students. I mean, this is a stress situation. When you go to college, you have to study. There's deadlines. There's a lot of pressure on you for a lot of reasons, but not just the cost of it. But, the success or not sometimes seems to be a do-or-die thing for many people. And I can understand getting threat. I can't understand doing a threat, but I can understand that some people would threaten. And the college here, sort of like with the Bobcat, the scare that in the Mirror News, is this available off campus, Dennis?
It is. It's in East and West Dearborn now.
Okay. Where in East and West Dearborn?
In East
Some
Dearborn.
Street corner in a...
No, green by Green a, Brain
a wire,
and Stormy Records.
Wire Basket.
At Dearborn Music and then at Rutgers Used Books.
Okay. So only a copy of the Mirror News. The current issue, November 18th, and it's going to be the last one for this
semester. No, we have
semester.
One more coming
one more.
Out.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, the November 18th issue has a picture of the coyote there that we got a picture. I'm not sure the Dearborn Press did. Where's Millard Berry? Oh, he was fired. That's right. He could have got a picture of the coyote.
Probably. This is by Patrick Krupa, though.
Right. Yeah, one of your Mirror News staff photographers.
Yes.
So good for him at being quick there. And it doesn't look very threatening. obviously, coyotes are just like any wild animal. You want to keep your distance from them. And this is over by the Kingfisher Bluff, which
right.
is the west side of the campus on the far side of the parking lots. And it definitely wasn't a bobcat. Our security said that, and the headline shouldn't have been there. So the shooting threat, well, there wasn't. Really, anything to make of it. I don't think it should have been, everybody should have been notified with this blanket warning.
No.
Most people don't realize, or we prefer not to, realize how close injury and death is to us at most points in time.
True.
Driving a car puts us in serious risk. Even walking across the street, I can't tell you because I don't know the number, how many pedestrians are killed every year in Michigan. I have a lot of good friends. One college professor who tried to walk across the street, a crazy driver hit him because
right.
they didn't look at the light. They just kept on going. They don't see people. They don't see anything in some cases. Maybe they were talking on their cell phone or whatever. And in fact, a novel I taught many times here, Moby Dick by Herman Melville. I know, it's a big whale story, right? No, there's actually little social essays. Every chapter is social essays. And one metaphor he uses is the whale line that runs down the length of the little whale boats. They go out after these huge whales mm-hmm. in these small little boats yeah, with about 10 or 15 people rowing.
It's crazy.
And one person throws the harpoon. But the harpoon has to be connected to something. They don't just throw harpoons. It's connected to the boat itself.
By rope.
But the rope is all coiled up there. Well, after they throw it, and when it hits the whale will jump away fast, and the rope may jump up and coil and wrap around somebody mm-hmm. and pull them out of the boat to their death. You know, but when they're going out there, they don't think that the whale line is their enemy or the potential death is sitting right next to the people in the boat.
Sure.
They can't, or they couldn't do their job, of course. If you really knew the risk of driving or being a pedestrian or doing anything in life, you would never do anything. I mean, there's significant risk. I'm not saying it's more than a percent or two of happenings, life is risky. Life is a challenge. And you try to minimize that, but you should always be aware, and it's good. Herman Melville, great American novelist, of course, he wanted us to live lives that encompassed the risk. We have to go beyond it, but we have to be aware of it. Oh, he pointed out also there, and I think in the same chapter, the danger of the home fire, the fireplace.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that isn't used so much anymore, but there's still fires that start in houses from the furnaces or from smoking or bad electricity
sure.
lines and so on. There are dangers out there, and we can't be totally vigilant all the time or we would be paralyzed, but we should still have a modicum of caution and importance about our everyday, every moment. You know, we shouldn't just sort of sleepwalk through life, because then you're really at risk. You're really
that's
in
true.
Danger. And so I think that's true. So I don't know. I mean, I understand the legality. So many colleges that, like, there was a sniper threat or whatever, and they didn't notify the whole campus, and they were criticized in the paper and nationally and by Fox News. And so I think today this full disclosure thing it's somewhat of a problem. For example, the Homeland Security people, they have sort of dropped the color-coded warnings
mm-hmm.
because it was always yellow or orange or whatever. It was always in out of the four colors, if I remember correctly. It was usually at the second from the top or the third from the top. And so everybody says, what the heck? Why tell me this? Yeah, there's always a risk. Anybody could be doing something crazy at any time. What can I do? You can't do anything except just be a little bit vigilant all the time. There's always risks there. So just be a little vigilant all the time. Be careful. Be in the moment all the time to enjoy everything that's positive, and also be aware of what's going on around you. That's all. That's all they're saying. And so, but the college, we actually had significant fear level raised here in the college after that first email went out,
yeah.
And they had to send another email to counter that. And even this article ends with HFCC's Department of Campus Safety did not return phone calls seeking comment for the story by press time. Because nothing happened. I don't think they wanted to even go on any further with it. After the coyote became a bobcat, you know.
or a mountain lion or a grizzly.
Yeah, because that doesn't... and you were mentioning that Dr. Mee was sharing with you that our president of our college is still getting every now and then a mention from somebody in the public about the bobcat.
Well, as of a week ago, she'd said that, yeah.
Well, a week ago, still.
Sure. No, when I ran into her, she goes, this is really cool. And she said, because the first thing I said,
yeah.
We have the picture, and she goes, you mean the bobcat? I mean, she was almost sarcastic, so. So, yeah, there it is.
Well, let's turn to Jim Hightower's comments for this week. Both are about food, yeah, and I thought it was appropriate for Thanksgiving.
Absolutely.
America's Good Food Movement, he talks about in his first commentary, and then something that he refers to and titles his comment as Earth Dinner. So we will be back with more of the new WHFR Journal on the station Making Waves here on our special Evacuation Day show, November 25th, 2011. Jim Hightower.
What better day than Thanksgiving to celebrate our country's food rebels? I'm talking about the fast-growing movement of small farmers, food artisans, local retailers, co-ops, community organizers, restaurateurs, environmentalists, consumers, and others, perhaps including you. This movement has spread the rich ideas of sustainability, organic, local economies, and the common good from the fringe of our food economy into the mainstream. It began as an upchuck rebellion, ordinary folks rejecting the industrialized, chemicalized, corporatized, and globalized food system. Farmers wanted a more natural connection to the good earth that they were working. Meanwhile, consumers began seeking edibles that were not saturated with pesticides, injected with antibiotics, ripened with chemicals, dosed with artificial flavorings, and otherwise tortured. These two interests began to find each other and to create an alternative way of thinking about food. Today, more than 13,000 organic farmers produce everything from wheat to meat, and organic sales top nearly $27 billion a year. Some 7,000 vibrant farmers' markets operate in practically every city and town across the land, linking farmers and food makers directly to consumers in a local supportive economy. Also, restaurants, supermarkets, food wholesalers, and school districts are now buying foodstuffs that are produced sustainably and locally. This shift did not come from corporate or governmental powers. It percolated up from the grassroots, and it's spreading as people inform themselves, organize locally, and assert their own democratic values over those of the corporate structure. This is Jim Hightower saying, family by family, town by town, this good food movement has changed not only the market, but also the culture of food. As you, your family, and friends sit down for a good meal this Thanksgiving, celebrate this change, which is truly worthy of our thanks.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
This holiday season, how about having an Earth dinner? Not that you'd eat Earth, but that you and others would gather around the table to celebrate the bounty of our good green earth. This is not just another meal, but a festive opportunity to have friends and family revel in the culture of food. Most of us don't realize that our dinner tells many stories, embodying our personal histories, family memories, music, art, and other connections besides our tummies. To help reawaken those cultural links in a way that can be tasty, touching, and fun, the folks at Organic Valley Family of Farms have come up with the novel idea of Earth Dinners. The concept simply involves throwing some sort of dinner party at which food is not merely consumed, but also is the focus of table talk, reminiscing, singing, laughing, game playing, and whatever else you can dream up. It can be a potluck dinner, a buffet, a five-course gourmet meal, a backyard barbecue, whatever suits you. The key is to know something about the food being served, where it came from, the history of some of its ingredients, songs written about it, and so on. The goal is to get everyone connecting in some personal or cultural way to the dinner as it progresses. Ask guests to tell about their very first food memory or to recall any family member who was a farmer or a jolly cook. Invite people of diverse backgrounds and all ages. Ask a farm family to join you, or a cheesemaker, or others involved in producing food. Then, eat, talk, enjoy. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help you get started, Organic Valley's website offers a sort of Earth Dinner Starter Kit. It includes tips on everything from menus to party favors, as well as providing reports on successful dinners that others have put together. Check it out at www.earthdinner.org. That's earthdinner.org. And have a good time.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
And keeping with the food theme on the new WHFR Journal for Friday, November 25th, station making waves, of course. Dennis, you had the article that was in one of these local papers, mm-hmm. Pressing Guide this week, about Panera Cares.
Yeah, Katie Hetrick wrote this wonderful article. Panera celebrates a year of giving back. And just to, I'll paraphrase this, go through it a little bit. A year after opening, the Panera Cares in Dearborn is going well and hopes to start job training programs for youth after the new year. Basically, a year ago, what they said was corporate-wide, they had tried this, they looked got their charitable offerings, and they said they give away about $100 million to $150 million a year in baked goods, and then another $2 million in cash. And they were looking for ways to do more, which I don't know. That's a cool thing. You're giving away a lot, mm-hmm. but you want to do more. And Dearborn is the second. There's three stores. I know one in St. Louis, one in Dearborn. I'm not positive where the other one is, but they did this donation thing where they would say, okay, here's the, it wasn't a price so much as a suggested donation.
Right.
And then people would give what they could. And here, this is an interesting, do you have any idea what percentage? Because I didn't, and I was always curious what percentage. 75 to 80% of the suggested donation is what most people will pay.
And I don't know if that is in addition, because it's I've eaten a couple of times at Panera Karis. There's actually another Panera that's closer to where I live, my home anyway, so I usually go there. The one down in Allen Park is...
Is that a Panera Karis also?
No. But okay. But I'm saying, the Panera Karis on Michigan Avenue mm-hmm. is good, and I've eaten there before. You can see what the retail price is, mm-hmm. and then, of course, you're asked to make a donation usually beyond that, but they will give people whatever you order for nothing if necessary.
That's true. From what I understand, they do not. There's a suggested donation, right. and they yeah. don't pressure you in any way. They, you know, here,
if the
pay?
Homeless can afford the bus trip and can find a bus that's running,
right.
They'll come out to Dearborn a lot now that we've mentioned this. But that hasn't been the case. They've been making a profit. They say as long as the donation is 75 to 80% or something, they can survive.
Well, that
and
is
I
what
think
they're...
that probably mm-hmm. means 75 to 80% of the retail cost. Now, they do have pretty expensive sandwiches.
Sure.
If you go to the retail stores, you think, gee, is a fold over focaccia sandwich, really $9? How much profit are they making there? Although I know a lot of places are selling big burgers for $6, $7, or $8 each.
Right. Well, according to this article states that it implies that the suggested donation is the retail price. So if people are, and the actual quote is, mm-hmm. And Dearborn customers are consistently giving about 70 to 80% of the suggested donation,
right.
which according to a spokesperson, a project manager for Panera Cares, is enough to keep those open. So, but anyway, it's been a year. They're deeming it a success, and they're moving forward with other stores.
Yeah, I'd say keep supporting that, folks, not because you can get food at lower than retail price, but just it's, some people... I usually pay a nice, when I ate at Panera Karis, I paid what I discovered was the retail, and then I paid more on top of it, even though they don't do service at the table, so you don't have to pay a tip.
Right.
But I gave more so that maybe, in my thought, would balance some people
and
not
that's exactly,
being able to pay as much.
That's exactly what the initial, when they started mm-hmm. the project, they were hoping that it would balance out, and it looks like that's where they're at. So people like you, thank you.
Yeah, well, of course, that's why I don't eat there a lot, because it's really expensive when you pay 20% more.
Right.
Here's an article that I kept from the end of August, but it's still relevant. Mark Bittman, very interesting name because he's the food critic for the New York Times newspaper, Bittman, B-I-T-T-M-A-N. And his columns often talk about healthy food and the food you should be eating and why it isn't as healthy in the stores. And the title of the article is to the point, Profits Before Environment. That is the selfishness of especially the large companies and the collusion of our government, of our state and federal governments in allowing them to give us food that is not as healthy, not properly labeling it or identifying it, and we're stuck with it. As he says here, somebody said, well, he gives a quote from an old-time movie, Gold Diggers, 1937. Glenda Farrell, the actress, is playing Genevieve Larkin, and she says, it's so hard to be good under the capitalistic system. And Bittman says, is anyone in power today, and even the Democrats, even trying? Last winter, the Department of Agriculture deregulated Monsanto's genetically modified alfalfa, despite concerns about cross-pollination of non-genetically modified crops. It then defied a court order banning the planting of genetically modified sugar beets pending completion of an environmental impact study. Monsanto's engineers these plants and makes Roundup, the herbicide that they resist. But Roundup-ready crops don't increase long-term yields. A host of farmers are now dealing with super weeds, that are resistant to Roundup.
No kidding.
Yeah. And there is worry about superbugs, nearly all courtesy of Monsanto. In fact, this system doesn't contribute to much of anything except Monsanto's bottom line. In fact, Monsanto, and there's been documentaries about this, if you want to use Roundup-resistant seeds, because if you're going to use Roundup to take care of the weeds...
Kills everything.
You have to get genetically modified seeds, whatever crop you're growing, directly from Monsanto. So they have you on an exclusive contract, not just for the pesticide, but for the seeds too. They in effect, because of the cost and the long-term commitment, they own your farm after a few years.
Yeah.
This is the horrible side of the story of many cases, and this has been told on in some documentaries, and I shouldn't actually be told more. But now there's super weeds and super bugs. And so thank you, Monsanto, which is, I think, a Michigan-based company, isn't it? Yeah, thank you, no thanks.
Well, they're on the top of a lot of lists, sociology classes. That company's...
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, and this, so the Department of Agriculture, this is not under the control of Republicans, under control of our president, Barack Obama, and FDA or whatever, whoever's on top of the... making these requirements. The United States exerts that same kind of pressure abroad in terms of doing bad things for genetically modified crops. WikiLeaks cables show that U.S. biotechnology outreach programs, as they call them, have promoted genetically modified crops in Africa, Asia, and South America. They've also revealed that diplomats schemed to retaliate against any European Union countries that oppose those crops, because the UE, at least, at the very least, they do absolutely require that people be notified when they're eating or consuming genetically modified or GM food, not from General Motors, but okay, genetically modified. And as Bittman goes on to say, sacrificing the environment for profits didn't stop with Bush, because it goes on now, and it doesn't stop with genetically modified organisms. Take, for example, the Keystone XL pipeline extension. Now, this has been put on the table, on hold until after the 2012 elections, okay, because it's too controversial. Of course, environmentalists say, oh, thank goodness it's been postponed. This was going to be a 36-inch wide, 3-foot wide pipeline, which will stretch from the Alberta tar sands across the Great Plains to the Gulf Coast, which will cost $7 billion and run for almost 1,800 miles, more than twice as long as the Alaska pipeline. Okay, it'll cross nearly 2,000 rivers, a huge wetlands ecosystem called the Nebraska Sandhills and the Ogallala Aquifer, which is the country's biggest underground freshwater supply. And therefore, the potential contamination of the 2,000 rivers, the largest freshwater supply that we have in the U.S., and the wetlands ecosystem. Because you know the Alaskan pipeline has not been trouble-free. There's been plenty of leaks and cracks and spills from that guy, too. And this one is twice as long. So if the Keystone is built, Bittman says we'll see rising greenhouse gas emissions right away, because tar sands production of oil creates three times as many greenhouse gases as does conventional oil that you just pump out of the ground. So the whole process has to, there, I guess it's the refinery or whatever, they get the sand, get the oil out of the sand.
Right.
So they're actually putting more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. And, of course, our increased dependence on fossil fuels, too, gasoline and other oils, will further the likelihood of climate change disaster. $7 billion in the plan, and it's always going to be more than that, you know. I thought one positive thing besides the since this article was written, the Keystone XL pipeline is on hold. But I can guarantee you that certain drill baby drill Republicans, if they get a Republican president in 2012, they will definitely start that up again. But what they have gone ahead for, and this is a threat too, but there was no refinery for gas or this oil, for oil to make it either gas or diesel or whatever, closer than Texas. That's why they needed the 1,700-mile pipeline to go from Alberta, Canada province, down to Texas. Because we haven't had a new refinery built in the U.S. in 30 years,
30 years. Would it be cheaper to build a new refinery?
Well, that's what the Obama administration is going ahead with, a refinery in Nebraska. Now, I'm thinking, Why not North Dakota? Why, you know, if you're going to have a pipeline, why not put it closer to the end of the pipeline? You can't tell me that Texas is all that well. Well, see, Texas, it's got that coastline, so you could ship oil to other countries. But don't we need the oil?
Sure.
So it seems to me if they're going to build a refinery and they got to use the tar sands oil, I mean, just a stopgap measure. I'd put $7 billion into solar myself, but
right.
Nonetheless,
Or wind, sure.
Yeah, right, and in the appropriate ways. But nonetheless, if you got to do it, let's get a new refinery built closer to the northern part of the U.S. and have the distribution from there. Got to create jobs.
The pipeline
would
too.
In North Dakota or Nebraska. Nebraska, gee whiz, that's so far south. That only saves maybe 800 miles from Texas.
Wait, do you think it should be right over the Canadian border?
Well, I don't know why the Canadians won't build a refinery there. I mean, again, just the cost. I guess refineries cost a lot of money. Don't cost as much as a nuclear reactor, though. So,
no.
It said that the Keystone XL pipeline would create 100,000 new jobs, but after it's built in 2 years, no. In fact, they say that after it's built, you won't need more than 200 people.
Can you imagine the security threat that would pose, too?
Of course. A 1,700-mile-long pipeline?
You can't. The only jobs after that, the 200 people are all watching it.
All the contamination and the 2,000 rivers and the eco-wetlands, which I guess nobody lives in, but that's appropriate. Just cutting off our flow of oil since we're so dependent on it.
But. You know what? The impending doom afterward would create a lot of jobs for cleanup. I don't think they're looking at it that way, do you?
Nope.
Nope.
There's also, of course, the fish farms. There's terrible contamination in the fish farms, folks, that Bittman's talked about before.
Well, the fish farms are wrong to begin with, the way they're packed in.
Yeah, they're packed in, and they feed them with pesticides.
That's right.
And antibiotics because they're living too close together, and they're living in the filth of the other fish. And never eat fish like... so-called Atlantic salmon. There is no such thing as wild Atlantic salmon, to my knowledge. It's all fish farms along the coast, and not healthy. Not healthy to eat that. So for your next holiday meal, think about these things. We have a commentary from Representative George Durrani, and that's going to fill out the hour, it looks like here. Boy, time flies when you have so many words.
Can we just say Wygonik is new?
Yes, go ahead.
He's Michigan Supreme Court has appointed Judge Richard Wygonik to Chief Judge of the 19th District Court.
Yes, it's not Mark Summers anymore.
Nope, he took his place, and he will replace him as the court's administrative boss.
Probably that was these lawsuits that Summers has lost so far. I mean, he's appealing, but probably that put him in bad light as a able administrator.
He is, and that's effective January 1, but he does not get additional compensation. It's just
a
title.
Yeah, it's a little, well, administrative work, too. So.
Okay.
Okay, well, let's listen to George Durrani. I asked him, I didn't realize he's one of the few Democratic members of the House Education Committee. So everything having to do with education goes through this committee. But Durrani has a problem in that the Republicans don't call on the Democrats, or if they try to make a comment on something, they get gaveled down, as it's called. Here's my interview with George Durrani. Okay, we're speaking today. It's November the 18th, 2011, with Representative George Durrani, who represents Dearborn to Lansing. And he is one of the members of the Education Committee, too, in his first term in office. Again, a great supporter of teachers and education in general. George, I just wanted to ask you a couple questions here. And one is, of course, it's a difficult situation. Lansing, being a Democrat and having points of view that are not shared by most of the Republican colleagues. Mm-hmm. But in the Education Committee, what do you expect is coming up in December? If you can, there's still a couple of weeks in session before Christmas holidays. Anything that people should know about that maybe they'd want to contact you or give you input on? Or is it just wrapping up bills that have already been introduced?
Well, it is pretty much wrapping up bills that I don't think anything new will come up between now and the end of the year. But in the Education Committee in particular, there is a bill to expand the scope of charter schools. Mm. In other words, to allow the universities that charter the schools or the universities that sponsor the charter schools to expand on that, and they would have unlimited number. We don't like that idea as Democrats. We feel that the public education system works very fine. Thank you very much. We've got statistics that show that some charter schools do better, some do worse. There are actually more that do worse than do better, but most of them pretty much perform the same as a K through 12 public school. So we don't feel that there should be a need for that. And also the fact that the universities are actually making money on this. They get 3% of the money that comes from the school fund. You know, if it's $7,000 per student, they're getting $210 for every student that they can sign up for their charter school. And if they have an unlimited amount, you can see how the money could add up for a university pretty quickly. And since their reporting back to the state is not the same as K through 12, we feel that that's an inadequate way of gauging if those schools are doing their job. Mm-hmm. And if we're not following the same rules as K through 12, then why are we allowing them to grow at any number that they want to? So it's a bad bill. They've been pushing it for a while. We've heard a lot of testimony. Most of it against it, but of course we know what the majority is, and so it'll be a difficult thing to probably stop from happening.
You were commenting earlier in a meeting here at Henry Ford Community College that even the inner workings on your education committee, that the Republican leadership is just gaveling down even any open discussion or commentaries from Democrats, and it happens on the House floor sometimes too.
Yeah, it happens on the floor more likely, but it's very, very discouraging when it happens in your own committee where, you know, there's not a whole lot of TV cameras or anybody watching. So they're not grandstanding. They just don't want to hear our points of view. And it's amazing where other representatives on their side will be able to ask a question, a second question, a follow-up question, another follow-up question. But we'll ask a question, then one, Mr. Chair, can we do a follow-up? No, we have to move on. And so it is very frustrating.
Not a good democratic process. There's no meeting of minds. It's not a question of compromise, but just getting all the points of view expressed to see who might have a better idea or a better idea for part of the bill.
Right.
And it's just being shut down, and things are being it seems like they're being pushed through without a lot of full discussion or testimony.
Well, yeah, and our only recourse to that is if we know sometimes what the testimony is going to be, and we do, sometimes in advance we'll know that, then we can just say, you know, would you mind asking or throwing this out in your testimony? So the question will at least be heard, rather than if they're not going to let us address the question, maybe in the testimony it can be addressed. So there's a tactic there that we can use, and we have, in order to get our voice heard. Like you say, it's good to have all the opinions out there, and then you can debate more logically, knowing what all the points are. But if you only know one side, there is no debate.
Well, we'll try to keep in touch with you on the new WHFR Journal, at least, and get the word out to the community whenever you need support. Or I know you're in the area a great deal.